Hey, welcome to the podcast. Justin here. Today I'm joined by Christian Gideon. This is a dude who I started following, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years ago on social media. And when I was looking around in the Midwest for people that were actually doing sweet stuff, his stuff popped up. He's down in Springfield, Illinois, I believe. And I've
Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah. Tried to go down there once or twice, drove through once, and we weren't able to connect. But we've connected over the phone a handful of times. And dude, this guy was the real deal before I was. And then I've kind of watched his career transition. And so I'm really excited to talk to him. So, hey, Christian, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good segue. Springfield is the most common city name in all the states in the United States of America. I've always heard that's why The Simpsons chose it.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So you're forgiven for not knowing the state.
So what I'm doing here on this interview part is I want to get a little bit of like the inspirational feel good story of like, how did you get started in photography?
Yeah. So this has been probably like 10 years ago. I was working in retail training for a large corporation I won't mention. And it was kind of when, you know, Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff was getting started, and I just needed an outlet. I'd played sports my whole life, and that was kind of my identity. So picked up a camera, started shooting friends, family, whatever I, you know, was drawn to, and started posting it to social media. And it took off from there. I know that sounds really simple, but it took off from there. And I was lucky from the very beginning to get some clients that saw something there and then just build from there.
Excellent. And then, so you've been going about 10 years, you say?
Yeah. About a decade now.
And then in that, I mean, what did you did weddings, you did portraits. What did you start with? And then what does that look like now for you?
Yeah. So I got into the game shooting weddings. At that time, there was this like wild world of people were starting to see what wedding photography could be.
Yeah.
And if you had a little bit different vision and a little bit of drive, you could really get into that. So it made, you know, for me, you know, I love people, so weddings made a lot of sense, but also that was the quickest way for me to get out of my retail job. Yeah. You know, so it was kind of a, you know, a twofold thing there. And yeah, jumped right into weddings and, you know, started shooting some commercial work on the side. But for the first 4 or 5 years, it was mainly portraits and weddings.
Yeah. So what, a few things about your stuff that always stood out to me. One is that like, you're a super attractive dude. So I always felt like the reason why your stuff looks cool is that like, I think it always seemed like people just wanted to be around you. Like you look cool. You bring that to the thing, especially in the wedding world where 10 years ago, it was so cheesy. And yeah, even in the last few years, it's like there's pockets of it that's really cool, but just, it just attracts a lot of cheesiness. And so my guess is that it seemed like your portrait work really informed your weddings and vice versa. And everything that I ever saw you do was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. He's not doing church basement weddings, but he's doing these like, he just makes it look so cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that was, I had no idea what I was supposed to do in the beginning. So intuition has always been like a common theme in anything that I shoot.
Yeah.
Also, you know, like I grew up in the Midwest and my family didn't have a lot of money growing up. So I hadn't seen a lot of the United States, and very quickly I was like lucky to, you know, to be shooting in New York, to be shooting in Colorado, California,
yeah,
you know, Mexico. And I'm a very curious person at heart. So I think of going into these spaces, it was like a new world for me. I felt like a kid again. Because I'd never been to a lot of these spaces. I was traveling extensively for the first time in my adult life. So every wedding I would walk into would just be like a whole new world of people and accents. And I'd been fairly sheltered up until that point.
Yeah.
And I think that came through a lot in my work because it was, totally. I wasn't jaded, you know, and bored and,
yeah,
and all that
if,
stuff.
If you have that humility when you shoot, I've always felt like that on social media. Like one of the best things that I can do, or one of the most off-putting things about like influencers, is they're like, hey, I'm in Maui again, you know, where to me, I think one of the most winsome ways to play social media is like, holy crap, guys, I have the privilege of being in Maui. Like that wonder and awe shows in work. Like your attitude about the places you interact with is so evident in your work when you actually step back and think about it.
It is. And I don't think looking back that that's necessarily tied to weddings or anything. I think that's just an innate, personality trait that some people have. Cause I still find that today, and that still drives my work, that just curiosity.
Yeah.
Just drives everything I do. And I don't know, with social media and the age of clout, I see so many people getting into, visual fields for likes or followers and stuff like that. And I think the people that are going to make it, who are doing real work, are the people that are just curious at heart.
Yeah. Okay. So then now what's your makeup of your business? What is it, mainly commercial? Are you still doing weddings?
So 2019 is a monster shift for me. I was a little burnt out with weddings and just feel like I had done my thing there to a point where I wasn't able to keep pushing the envelope forward. And over the past 3 or 4 years, I've been shooting a lot of commercial work and soccer sport-based work. And I decided at the end of 2018 to go full steam ahead in that. And that vision.
So cool.
So this year, this winter, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I've been working on it and literally going to launch it later this week. A creative agency that handles mainly sports specific storytelling and things of that nature. I can't say too much yet. So yeah, this year is totally different for me. It's almost all commercial work. So still doing the freelance stuff and then starting a creative agency that's kind of like, it's my baby,
Dude, so, huge congrats. That's incredible.
Yeah, appreciate it.
I love that. Okay, well, that's a good next question I have for you. I think it makes a lot of sense with that. And we've touched on it a little bit, but what would you say then kind of like is your signature style, or what's like the angle on your agency, or what if do you have like a, this is the Christian Gideon look, or this is the approach? And I hate that from the cheesy like style, or what's your preset? But I do think mentality, like when I look at myself, it's like, dude, I like beauty. So everything I'm going to shoot is, I want to be beautiful. I want it to be vibrant. I'm not sentimental. So it's not, I don't want it to be really washed out, or I don't gravitate towards black and white. So some of those things, I'm like, what are some of your guiding Christian Gideon things? Because your soccer stuff looks like your portrait stuff, which looks like your wedding stuff. I mean, I kind of know what my answer is for you on this, but what's your answer?
So I'm going to reverse engineer that a little bit.
Great.
I think in the industry, we always, as visual artists, we look at creating a style, and we think that style is a combination of presets, cameras, lenses, type of light we shoot in, and to some extent it is. But for me, it's always been about mood, and starting with mood and then taking those things and building off that. And so like for the creative agency I'm starting, I know right then and there, I'm never going to be able to compete with, Sports Illustrated and their cadre of photographers and filmmakers, or Netflix that's starting to do a lot of sports stuff, and some of those huge production companies. So what I'm always looking for is uncovering the stories that nobody wants to tell, shooting in the places that nobody wants to shoot, being out, being in, in situations that need to be uncovered and need to be told. And I think that does so much for creating a mood, and then I take it back from there. I love nice, soft, interesting light, but for me, it's never really been about like gear and presets. I know that that's not what people want to hear, because inevitably I get 10 DMs a week about what I shot, what lens something was shot with, or what preset was used. But I think a lot of it, and moving forward with the creative agency and more in the video filmmaking side, is being able to really tell a story. And that begins with light, and it begins with, the people in front of me. and the camera presets and all that stuff is like the final and usually most insignificant part.
Completely. Dude, that's, I mean, it's like, that's the thing I feel like we got to shout from the rooftops is that like, you're not your preset, you're not your gear. But again, I mean, that's why I like the iPhone so important in some sense, because it's like, you can tell better story, good storytellers tell a better story with an iPhone than self-important people shooting on 5D Mark IVs, you know, with a 35 1.4 or something like that. It just
absolutely.
It doesn't that gear. You need the right gear for the job, but we need more photographers that have a passion to tell something rather than photographers that are pretty consumed with their 85 or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's the quickest way to tell who is part of that like clout chasing, you know, industry, and they care about what everybody thinks about their work, or people that are doing it for the right reasons. Is you know, whether you're trying to, people think that if they develop a formula, as in if I use this person's camera, the same camera, same lens, if I use this preset, if I shoot in this location, you know. And the thing that you can never know what somebody's intuition is. You can never know somebody's mind, and that's the thing you can't sell. So in a capitalistic society, you know, nobody, very few people can sell that. And so I always hold, you know, those beautiful things that come out of my head sometimes, and that the people I work with and my partners, we hold those very close to the vest, because in today's society, that's the one thing you can't,
that's one thing you got,
someone else can't monetize, you know?
I, in defense of young photographers, I will say that, like, when I start playing guitar, I learn other people's songs, you know, and like when I found out that Tom York or the Radiohead, they used the Rat distortion pedal on OK Computer for something, I went and got the Rat. I still was terrible, not as good at them. But I think the initial steps in any art form is imitating people that we like. You just hope that you don't have to stay in that spot forever.
I agree. But I think what happens is, in this, you know, the way our visual world is made up today is people go plug in those things and they haven't lived life yet. They haven't had their heart broken. They haven't, you know, woken up in a foreign city where you don't speak the language and you have that intimidation. They haven't, you know, wondered where their next meal was coming from. They haven't lived a lot of hardships.
Yeah.
And even if you're like going back to the Tom York thing, like you could do all these things to get as close to him as possible, but you don't know what his first breakup was like. You don't know what his first love was like. You don't know what inspires him. So that's why I don't like how much hero worship and influencer culture has like come into our society, is because if people think you can just reverse engineer and build that same, a clone from the ground up. And it's not possible. You know, no matter, any great artist is going to have lived a life and going to live like these highs and ultimate and like lowest of lows that you'll never experience. And if we put those into our art, then like nobody can touch you, you know, but again, that's something you can't sell. So I definitely recommend like having the nicest gear possible and put yourself in this position to succeed. But what I see is a lot of young artists that want to make this masterpiece, and they haven't lived a life that is given them the vision to make the masterpiece.
Yeah, that has informed that at all. Yeah, that's a great thought. Man. Yeah. Have you had somewhere along the line, like, have you had a lucky break? I mean, because you were crushing the Instagram game on the first wave, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the whole suggested user thing happened a couple of times, which is kind of annoying these days now. But yeah, I was an early adopter for sure.
So what it's really interesting to kind of follow your social media trajectory, because I don't know that I don't think that, you know, somebody like you was guilty of getting us where we are. But like, I feel like how you play the game now is different than how you played the game.
Oh, absolutely. Getting back to that lucky break, I'll tell you a quick story. It's been about, I think, 5 years ago now. I have really wanted to get into covering some soccer from a, you know, a unique perspective. And I had emailed Sporting Kansas City, my local team, and was like, hey, here's my portfolio. I've never shot a game, but I have a vision. If you could just get me a pass for the game, I'm like, I would love to come up and shoot it. And so they were like, yeah, you know, you've got good work. Come on up. And I, you know, I really went into it with a plan to bring, like, you know, documentary meets editorial work, you know, to the game, and really put a lot into it. No money or anything like that. So anyways, I shot it, felt really good about the images, put them on my blog, and then, as a thing, you know, sent them over to the media people at Sporting, like, hey, thank you, here's the images, feel free to use them. And then on Twitter, I had posted a link to that blog. Well, the head of media at the time for Sporting retweeted me. So instantly, it was kind of out into the soccer world, you know? And then the head of digital, or I don't know for sure what it was at that time, of Major League Soccer retweeted that. So, like, super quickly, all these images, the first time I'd ever shot, were in front of a lot of soccer people on Twitter, right?
And that's, I mean, there's more soccer people than we think.
Oh, dude, it's a monster.
And Twitter, they're deeper. They're, you know, I mean, it's... Yeah, soccer people are all soccer people. Yeah.
Yes. So I got a call like 2 days later. This guy in New York, he works at an advertising agency. He's like, you know, who are you? How long have you been shooting soccer? I've been looking for this. Like, I've been looking for what you just did. What's your story? And I was like blown away. Like, what? You know, like, what? And so this was the first year in MLS. They had two teams in New York, and they were playing in like 2 weeks for the first time. And so it was a big event. And his agency handled the Heineken soccer account. And he's like, we want to fly you out to New York, pay you, pick you up at the airport, blah, blah, blah. And I want you to do exactly what you just did for us, for Heineken soccer. And yeah, and that's it. And I'm like, you know, are you okay? Sure. You know, so I didn't know this guy from Adam. I didn't know if he was like, you know, like what was going on. So I fly into New York, they send like a black car to pick me up, you know, and I'm just like, this is ridiculous. Anyways, went and did my thing there, and I developed a relationship with this guy named Sean Francis, who is one of the kindest, most interesting people I've ever met in my life. And through working together that first time, we've been working on soccer projects for his agency all over the U.S. We just went to Jamaica for a week. And he'd become a mentor of sorts, like one of my good friends. So that was definitely my break into a lot of the sports work. And then there's no way I would have been able to have the vision or talent or skills to start this agency without his guidance and recognizing me and, you know, in his mentorship and friendship. Wow. So that was definitely one of... if not my biggest lucky break, you know?
Dude, that's amazing. I love it. There was this worship leader in Kansas City at this like super Pentecostal church. And he had this quote that said, "We practice our instruments so that when the Spirit leads, there's less resistance." And I feel like that all the time, where like, as a photographer, we're like always practicing, getting better, so that like when the opportunity comes, we're not, you know, in your case, like on the field and then like, how do I change the ISO or something stupid? But like, second nature. So you're actually prepared and you took a risk, you put yourself out there. And then all of a sudden, like what I've seen of your soccer stuff is different than the way everybody else has done it. You brought like beautiful, and I hate to use this just can have a derogative context, but this like hipstery vibe, like you said, mood to soccer in a way that it hasn't been, but it works so well with these dudes and these images. I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah. And I think that's going to keep going even more with the video work. And there's a very tight knit community of people making soccer visuals in the States here. And honestly, it's been kind of wild over the past few years. You know, the 4, 5, 6, 7 people that are really making the like the most amazing work there, we've all like become friends because of overlap, and it's a really neat community. One thing I wanted to hit on real quick, rewind for just a second, you were talking about the, you know, you hone your skills so when you get your chance, you know, like you can shine. And I was, long story short, I was filming a mini documentary on a Mexican-American soccer player last year. It was my first big project like that. It ended up getting like 2 million views on social media. Like, it was really great. I directed and co-shot it. Well, I had met this guy, my friend, who's become a great friend. His name's Tyler. And we met before a soccer game through social media. He had never worked in creative at all. Like, you know, in any way, shape, or form. Well, I started to get to know him, and he's huge soccer nerd. The guy, like, lives and breathes soccer, is so intelligent about tactics, history, the sociological aspects, all of it. He is bilingual and working on Portuguese and just had all these, like, interesting, crazy skills. So we had talked in a bar in D.C. about, like, this Mexican-American soccer player named Jonathan Gonzalez and wanting to tell his story. Well, through a weird connection with Sean, who I mentioned earlier, I had an in with his people. So we pitched them, you know, we want to do this documentary. And we brought Tyler in the whole time. And right before we were leaving to go film like the Mexican national team and all this big stuff, Tyler called me and he's like, "Dude, I don't know if I can do this." He's kind of having that like freak out moment, you know, like, I've never worked in creative and you're asking me to produce an interview and like speak, you know, all these different things for this documentary that's going to go live on like on the internet and going to be a big deal. And I told him that. I was like, "Dude, you know, you've never worked in creative, but you know this kid's story. You're the one that told me about it. You are fluent in English and Spanish, you know, which we have to have in this documentary. You're personable. You're all these things that like agencies or would kill to have, you know, would yeah. kill to have. And it has nothing to do with like, did you go to art school? Like, did you know what I'm saying? Like, have you worked at an agency?" I was like, I need you. You are the integral other half of this. And we went and did it. And dude, it just ended up being like the most amazing project, life-changing, and I don't need to get into all that, but it's exactly what you said is, you know, this guy didn't know how to touch a camera. He didn't know how you're supposed to do things. He doesn't know, like, was his label supposed to be producer or this or that, but, like, he just did it. Yeah. And there's just, you can't, like, put a price on that drive and vision, and it has so little to do with labels and so much to just do with who you are. And I was like, "Dude, you know, like, you spent your whole life acquiring these skills and these interests, and maybe this is what, like, why, you know, because you're supposed to work on this." So him and I are actually like starting the agency, which is crazy because in two years ago when I met him, he had, you know, no work, no interest in, or like no background in creative at all. So
that's amazing.
Yeah, perfect example of that, yeah.
Okay, so in the last few years, you've been starting to get in front of people, you know, that, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago you never would have imagined, but has there been like one shoot or one thing that you've done that you were like super intimidated by the people you got to shoot, or like what's the craziest job you've gotten hired for or something like that?
You know, I've had several of those like freak out moments, you know? And, you know, I'm pretty good about keeping calm and focusing on the work. But it's been about 3 years ago now, I was hired to shoot the Major League Soccer All-Star Game, and they were playing Arsenal at the time. Arsenal was coming over here for, like, preseason, and a lot of times Major League Soccer will have their All-Stars play, like, a team from England or Spain.
Yeah.
And I'm an Arsenal supporter, so, like, it was, like, a dream come true to be like, "Oh, man, I have to, you know. I get to shoot my favorite team." Well, I had taken my oldest son, Mason, with me at the time, who was 16. And he was kind of, I was like, "You know, you can go with me. I'll have to work on the field, but I'll get you a ticket to the game." And he was like more than happy, you know, more than thrilled. Like, absolutely. So the morning of the game, my friend Sean, who we were working on the project together, he's like, "I'm going to go get our press passes and I'll be back in a little bit. And then we'll head over to the stadium." So he comes back in like 20 minutes and he literally has like just his arms are full of lanyards and passes. I'm like, what is all that? And he's like, "Well, I knew somebody and I had Mason you know, like a VIP tent past the All-Star game and also a field pass to shoot the game with you. And I'm like, Mason just like his jaw drops, you know, because he had, you know, he knows his way around a camera and has worked with me on some smaller projects and things like that, but nothing like this. And then to make a long story short, we're down on the field before the game and players are coming out of the tunnel and we're right there at the end. And I just, I kind of turned and looked at him and he had this like starstruck, like, I'm like 2 feet away from some of my like favorite players and getting to shoot this with my dad, you know?
Oh my gosh.
For me, it wasn't a freak out moment necessarily on my end. It was seeing it in somebody else, like very close to me. And it made me like super appreciative of the opportunities I've had, you know? And
dude,
yeah.
Here's the thing. Again, worldwide, a soccer player is so much bigger than a football player. You know, like the idea
absolutely.
That like, this isn't like, I don't know. This isn't like, I've been in an airport and seen Jose Canseco. It's like, that's not that. This is every single one of them. Yeah. And then I mean, my daughter's six, so I'm not fully there yet. Like she doesn't understand what I love to the same extent, but man, that I get a little bit of that, like how huge that would be to see that in your son and be able to kind of put him in that place. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I had one more I'll make quick. It was last fall. I was hired by Puma to go shoot the biggest game in France between Marseille and PSG. Mm-hmm. And it was in Marseille, and Marseille is known as being like their fans are maybe the craziest and most hardcore in the world. And I had a friend that had gone to me, and she had never been to a soccer game ever, but like she kind of knew what she was getting into. And tickets to the game were going for like $800-900 a pop. So I'm like, you know, just go watch it at a pub near the stadium and I'll catch you after the game. Sorry. But so long story short, right before like we're heading over to the stadium, the Puma rep slips me like an envelope, like, here's your tickets. And I'm like, oh, I don't really need one. She's like, well, it's all you can eat. And it's ticket, all you can eat, all you can drink. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I was like, I go back up to the hotel room. I told my friend Brenna, like, don't count on it, but I may have your ticket. Anyways, it was just pandemonium, you know, lighting flares in the streets, fans going insane. You had Kylian Mbappe and Neymar playing, you know, some of the biggest names like in the world. And I kind of had another one of those moments through somebody else's eyes. I got into the, you know, through the media credentials thing, slipped her my tickets, and I'm down on the field before the game, and I like look up, you know, and she's like 20 rows up in my seats, like first soccer game ever, arguably like one of the best rivalries in the world. And I'm just like, holy shit, I'm in France.
Yeah.
You know, shooting these players, but then this person. So I don't know, sometimes seeing crazy stuff through someone else's eyes tends to hit me harder than my own.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I just was sitting there thinking like, I can't even imagine like what is going through her head, you know, because like the stands, like the hardcore supporters are like shooting flares across the field, throwing bottles at Neymar, like it's just pandemonium. And I was just sitting there like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to ever top this and bringing someone to their first game. Like it would have to be like a World Cup final or something. But
yeah, holy
God. Yeah. So a lot of times it's about like, it's about the people on the periphery, the people that are like close to me, how they view an opportunity, you know, because when I'm in it, I'm just working. You know?
Yeah. Oh man, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the coolest part about like it's really funny to watch your career because even a really beautiful intimate wedding or even the craziest wedding dance party probably doesn't compare to 50,000 fans in a soccer stadium, you know, and these footballers that are getting paid more than we'll ever see in our life. For just playing that game or something like that. So it's like the scope of your work just absolutely blew up, which is really cool.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I still shoot a few weddings here and there. You know, they're like a good way to pay the bills. And I always try to stay so present, even in those smaller things, even in those smaller moments. You know, as I'm launching this agency, you know, like funds are an issue because I basically am saying I'm quitting everything that has made me money for 10 years and starting this vision all over. So, you know, I'm still taking work on the periphery and yeah. and trying to be as into that and as focused when I'm there and treat it as such. But on the other side, you are right. That's the whole reason I'm starting this agency, is I built a skill set and built a connection base and have a vision. And it's like, okay, this is bigger than me now.
Yeah.
So I've brought in a few of these people that are very close to me in this world to start this thing. And so it's been a quicker transition than I would suggest. But if there's anybody listening that's, you know, starting off as a photographer, that would be like perfect advice, is treat every assignment like it's the biggest one you'll ever have, and you'll create better work and make strong connections. You know, that sounds kind of corny, but it's true. Like, if you only focus on the big ones, like, you're going to alienate people, and, you know, you're only as good as the weakest work in your portfolio. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't make amazing images, you know, sometimes that's more important than like the really amazing portfolio stuff. Is, you know, how good are you on your worst day, I guess, you know?
So. Do you feel like there's any specific gear or any like tools that you'd be like, I couldn't do my job without this? It's kind of like what's your current gear setup or products that you love? But I guess I'm trying to see, like, we've already addressed it. It's like, I don't want somebody to listen to this podcast and walk away and all they got was that Christian Gideon shoots
right.
Sony. But is there anything that you're like, man, this is the tool that has allowed me to see it this way? Or
yeah. So two things there. One is straight gear, and then one is more like conceptual.
Yeah.
I'm not obsessed with shooting film, and I don't shoot film to be one of those people that says they shoot film. But over the past 3 years, when I'm not shooting a professional assignment, I have been shooting a ton of film because it makes me focus on image making, and it really makes me go through the slow process of details and exposure.
Great.
And a lot of those things. And having a film camera in my hands doesn't feel like work, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And being able to keep that passion alive to just document and just create outside of paid assignments has been amazing for me. Like, okay. It keeps me fresh. It keeps me open. It keeps me, you know, it keeps my skills super sharp. And sometimes that's been like a point and shoot camera. Sometimes it's been like a Contax, you know, like G2, like really super high end film camera.
Yeah.
But I very, very rarely will ever take a personal image with a digital SLR. Okay. I just don't. That feels like work to me. And so, yeah, I highly recommend, you know, even if it's, you know, like disposable point and shoots, like figure out tools, you know, if anybody's listening, like figure out tools that make you excited to create and that challenge you. And for me, sometimes digital cameras don't feel that way. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. I just sold my G2. Dang it.
Oh, dude, I love that camera. I sold mine too, just because I couldn't justify. Honestly, I'm too hard on gear, and that thing looks like the Porsche, and I'm like, this is going to be broken, and you know. So, but on the other thing there, this is more conceptual, and I've learned this in starting the agency. Like, I'm an ideas person. You know, I'm serving as creative director in this journey. I have ideas for days, but what I've learned is the other people in this agency bouncing these ideas off them, they go from good to great, like really quickly, and I think that we spend so much time in our own heads as visual creators that we underestimate the value of feedback. And if you look at the way our society is set up, everything it gears you to be even more in your own head. I'm going to take an image, I'm going to post it to social, and then judge myself off the likes. Well, I totally do not care what anybody on social media thinks. But these few close friends I've been working with creatively amplified my ideas and vision like you wouldn't believe. And so, like, if we're, you know, as much as we talk about gear, I want to talk about like the other things you can do to, you know, to push your vision forward. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, shooting film and keeping it fresh there and just not having any expectations, but also like on that other side, like, it's not obviously not gear based, but just having people around you who you trust their vision, you trust their feedback, like has been those two things keep me fresh, curious, and keep my drive just through the roof, you know?
Dude, that's excellent. So we're gonna end this interview podcast, and then in just a moment we're gonna start our second one. So check out part two. Part two, I wanna dive in on kind of finding your niche. I'm gonna say niche because when people say niche, I wanna punch.
I usually say niche, but I've also struggled with how to pronounce this word. So let me know if you ever.
I think niche sounds so pretentious, but it does sound correct. So I'm gonna say
I use niche in meetings and I use niche when I'm having coffee.
Exactly. Right. So finding your niche, and then I think that you're somebody that, from what I have heard, has really fought to do the self work and understand social media and kind of the poison in it. So I want to address social media with you as well. So if you're listening, check out part two.